Good morning, good day, good afternoon, wherever you are, and welcome to our three-part series, The Great Invocation, A Voiced Diamond. Let's very briefly see what we will be covering. In part one, we'll be covering its origin. In part two, its meaning. And in the last part is its potency. So let's start with the first one. Part one, its origin. Who gave it, to whom, and when? But before we start, let's see what DK said about the Great Invocation itself. He wanted us to collect everything that he said about the Great Invocation and to prepare a brief manual as to its use and purpose, putting a copy in the hands of all those willing to use it. And a comprehension of its origin, its meaning, and its potency will make the Great Invocation far more effective. Now, I'm sure that there's a lot of things that DK has said that I have missed, but I'm hoping that the little bit that I've gathered is enough to give us an idea of how important it is and its various meanings, and particularly the potent effects, making therefore the Great Invocation a great preparation for the reappearance of the Christ. So let's start first of all by looking at the Great Invocation as a cosmic event. What does that really mean? So to one of his disciples, DK said to him that he wondered if this disciple had grasped the momentous significance of this presentation of a cosmic, planetary, and individual alignment or invocation, providing, as a result, a spiritual inflow right to the very heart of humanity and from the highest sources. So this is what we're going to speculate. What does DK mean by the Great Invocation and its inflow from the highest sources? So, very importantly, saying to this disciple that in its use and its distribution, that he has been participating in a cosmic event of tremendous importance. Let's hope that this little presentation today will convey this importance that DK is talking about. We know that there is a stream of energy that comes straight from Sirius. And this enters directly into hierarchy, and it carries with it the principle of Buddhi, which is cosmic love. And this cosmic love is the principle found at the very heart of every atom. Now, this is quite an arresting thought if we stop and think about it. Next. From cosmic fire, we know that Sirius is the soul of our solar logos. But we also know that Sirius, the binary star, has a very close relationship with our own planetary logos. And that Sirius is a very important factor in the spiritual life of our planet. Therefore, bringing its energy to bear directly upon hierarchy itself, hierarchy being the heart center of our planetary logos. And hierarchy is located on the Buddhic plane. So, cosmic love from Sirius entering directly into the heart center of our Logos. We know that entering hierarchy, there is a very potent triangle, therefore, between Sirius, the heart of the sun, and our own hierarchy down here on Earth. So we can see how potent this cosmic love is and how directly it's entering our planet. Now let's see the zodiacal signs which lie beyond our solar system. We know that Gemini is the force that produces the changes needed for the evolution of the Christ consciousness at any particular point in time and space, thus making Gemini the most dominant power in the mutable cross and one of the most important zodiacal signs out of the 12. Why is that so? It's because Gemini transmits the very powerful cosmic love. And it controls every one of the pairs of opposites in the great wheel. So this second ray of love and wisdom pours through Gemini, and therefore love underlies the whole universe. God is love, we are told in esoteric astrology, making therefore Gemini one of the most important of the 12 signs, and its influence lies behind every single one of them. So Gemini controls esoterically the heart of our solar system, and therefore it controls the pulsation of life, which sustains all that is, making Gemini connected therefore with the heart of the sun itself, which is the love of the whole. And we know that Gemini, our sun is the heart center of the one whom naught may be said. This cosmic being. So let's see how it is a very, this is an attempt on my part to put it all together in this image here, in this slide. Let's see. So the cosmic love emanates from Sirius. Gemini forms a point of entrance for this cosmic love from Sirius, entering our solar system. We know from just before that there is a very special link between Sirius and our planetary logos here. But we also know that our planetary logos is the hierarchical ruler of Gemini, and it is also the esoteric ruler of Gemini's polar opposite, Sagittarius. So the cosmic line of force from Gemini to Sagittarius and from Sagittarius to Gemini, esoterically related therefore to our Earth, What that really means is that it guarantees the development of the soul and the unfoldment of form as an expression of that soul. Now, if hierarchy is the heart chakra of our logos represented as a lotus, then the Christ, being the head of hierarchy, is the jewel of that lotus. And we know that the jewel transmits cosmic love. The jewel is at the center of every atom and every chakra. And we know also that Christ is a Syrian initiate, and he is the embodiment of the cosmic ray of love and wisdom which flows through him and therefore through the jewel of every atom. So at the June full moon of 1945, Christ announced his decision as final and irrevocable to reappear again on the physical plane. So the decision of Christ to reappear again on earth, bringing his disciples with him, drew forth this permission from Sanat Kumara, the Lord of the world, the Ancient of Days, as he was called in the Bible, the right to use certain words of power or stanzas of direction, as it's called. But we are also told in the reappearance of the Christ that this right is never lightly accorded. So when the crown is given the right to use the great invocation, a permission that was never granted before, as it is one which is up to then had been used only by the most exalted spiritual being. So this is quite not only an honor, but Christ earned this right to use the great invocation through his decision to reappear. And we are told that Christ himself used it for the very first time at the June full moon of 1945, which is the full moon of the Christ, as you know. And from the Christ, then Christ instructed DK to pass it on to us. So he was given permission again from the Christ to not only give it to hierarchy or to pass it on to hierarchy, but also to pass it on to us, the disciples, or anybody else who need to use it or who can use it rather. So let's have a very brief summary. What makes the Great Invocation a cosmic event? It's because it comes from Sirius himself to Gemini, to our solar logos and the solar system. Then that energy was transmitted to our own planetary logos, whose will is essentially love. Then passed on to the Christ, the head of hierarchy, hierarchy being the head chakra of our planetary logos, the heart chakra of planetary logos. then given to Master DK, and then passed on to us on Earth. But you know, to really understand the origin of the Great Invocation, we need to have a look at Christ's experience at Gethsemane. Because that's where it all began. So let's have a brief look at this. We are told that Christ's evocation of the fire of will of Shambhala was initiated symbolically in the Garden of Gethsemane. But DK tells us that three times Christ evoked the Shambhala force. The very first time as a child in the Temple of Jerusalem, then again in the Garden of Gethsemane, and his third and final evocation covered 9 years from 1936 to the full moon of June 1945. But this period in reality constitute only one event to the Christ. This is why we need to go back to the Garden of Gethsemane. What really happened in that garden? Something new, and yet it was planned from the very depth of time, happened in that quiet garden. For the very first time, Christ anchored on earth a very tenuous thread of the divine will, which we are told, even after 2,000 years, is but a very thin, frail line of connecting energy. And it just shows us how powerful this energy is. That even the Christ has not anchored it in its full capacity, because I think otherwise it will blow us apart. So, Christ representing mankind anchored our planetary logos will on earth, and therefore making it possible for intelligent humanity to carry it out. And we are also told that it was the angel born under Capricorn which came to Christ in that garden, fused his individual will with a divine will, enabling him to carry out his mission to completion. As he came to fabricate this gossamer thread which bound the two together, linking Shambhala and Hierarchy, the holy city. And now the will of God can be carried out to fruition. So what is this thread that DK is talking about? It's really the planetary Antakarana. So there are two parts to this Antakarana. First, linking in consciousness, making humanity aware of Hierarchy. And the second part, linking Hierarchy with Shambhala. So this Christ did by virtue of a completed and finished and constructed Antakarana, linking Shambhala to Hierarchy and Hierarchy down to humanity. Therefore facilitating the work of all future disciples, not only for the past 2,000 years, but for the rest of the world period. He made it possible, their unimpeded progress as far as the opening of each stage of this planetary Hara Antikorana is concerned. And where it says in the New Testament that the angels came and ministered unto the Christ, the correct implication is that those who dwell in Shambhala use that period to instruct Christ, who has made his decision through an expression of his divine nature and in the significance of the divine purpose. So he was in touch with those exalted beings that constitute Shambhala, the will of the planetary logos. So therefore, what was the nature of this council, we must ask? And this concerned the relation of our planetary logos to the whole solar system, to the solar logos himself. And the decision is made through this development of a higher sensitivity, which led inevitably to cosmic vision, to cosmic perception. Therefore, having fused his will and love, Christ consciousness became extraplanetary, went beyond our solar system, as is the consciousness of the Lord of the world, Sanat Kumara. He could then touch certain heights of awareness and contact solar agencies which had never been contacted before by man. And by uttering, "Father, not my will, but thy will be done," Christ expressed the will of Sanat Kumara in love, as he embodied love and will at that time. So the Christ, therefore, kneeling beside the rock, which we are told is symbolic of the depth of the mineral kingdom, of the activity of Vulcan, the fashioner, he raised his eyes upwards to where the light of revelation broke forth. And he knew at that moment what he had to do. What was his work? And at the moment of this complete surrender to the Father's will, to the sacrifice of his life, to the fulfillment of the plan, suddenly a great expansion of consciousness took place. He received a vision of Sanat Kumara's divine intention, not only for us humanity, but through humanity, for the planet as a whole. He saw the whole thing instantly. His cosmic perception saw the whole plan in a flash. He saw the plan, its goal, its techniques and its methods, its laws and their application, its effects, the hindrances that were to be met, the energy, which is that of love, that needed to be used, and the close and growing relation and interplay between hierarchy and humanity, the heart center of our logos and its throat center. Everything was revealed to him in that instant, and he fully understood it. And therefore, as that great expansion took place, the Christ took the sixth initiation. But we also know that between the sixth and the seventh initiation, there's an interim of divine fusion that takes place. And we know too that the seventh initiation can only be undergone when the will of the Master is completely merged in that of the planetary Logos. I am noticing that I'm experiencing difficulties, audio difficulties. Joe, is that correct?
I'm hearing you well. It may be that your computer is alerting you. I think.
Yes, it is. Sorry about that, guys.
Let's carry on, and I'll.
Let's carry on. Okay. Yes. Thank you, Joe. Sorry, guys, I am having a lot of trouble with my computer lately. And I was a bit concerned that I was completely out of audio contact with all of you. Okay, so resuming. So Christ took the sixth initiation, but he may have also been in between the sixth and the seventh, where there is a divine fusion of will that takes place. But we know today Christ is facing a great initiation. The final test, we are being told, a major test. But when he has passed this test and fulfilled his task, he will pass to a still more exalted position in the Father's house, or to some distant place of service where only the most exalted can follow him. But before all this can happen, he must enter again the public arena, play his part in world affairs, and prove the scope of his mission. So then, what is? What is this initiation, we must ask? Well, we know that Christ embodied the second aspect, love, and fused it with the third aspect of divinity, light, and these two aspects received full expression. Now, it remains the will to receive complete and full embodiment. And this is what Christ is preparing. And as a result of this embodiment of the will aspect, he was granted the permission to use the great invocation, which was never granted before. At the temple and at Gethsemane, he established for the very first time in planetary history contact with the Spirit of Peace. He established for the first time in planetary history a contact between humanity, hierarchy, and Shambhala, and linked these three planetary centers with the Spirit of Peace, enabling therefore humanity to be in touch with the Spirit of Peace. And as a result of his decision to reappear and the consequent granted right to use the great invocation, the spirit of peace descended upon Christ. So you may well ask, who is the spirit of peace? And why is he so important? Well, we are told that the spirit of peace, or the spirit of equilibrium, is an extraplanetary being of terrific cosmic potency, not just planetary, cosmic, which means that it comes way beyond our solar system. He overshadows the Christ, very much like Christ overshadowed Master Jesus in Palestine. Christ therefore serves as a channel for his directed potency, because he's so potent he cannot come down from his high place. So he is destined to bring peace eventually upon earth through the expression of goodwill, which will bring about right human relations. Christ, therefore, is the agent of the spirit of peace. And this achievement of establishing that planetary link between Shambhala, hierarchy, and humanity enabled him to put humanity in touch with the spirit of peace, therefore completing that link. Therefore, the spirit of peace overshadows the Christ now. Christ serves as a channel for his potency on earth. But we are being told that this potency will only come to its full expression when Christ walks the earth again. But at the moment, he's gathering momentum. We know too that as a result of Christ's decision and his spiritual fusion with the will of the planetary Logos, the avatar of synthesis has become, for the time being, Christ's close associate as well. So why is the help of the silent avatar, as the avatar of synthesis being called, why is it so important? It is an event of supreme and planetary importance, DK tells us. Why is that? It's because this being, the silent avatar, is closely to the will aspect of divinity, the first aspect. And as Christ is preparing himself to embody this quality of will, he's preparing himself to synthesize the three divine qualities, light, love, and will, the three aspects of divinity. Therefore, the triangle of masters within hierarchy forms a triangle of power. The Manu, representing Shambhala, the first aspect of divinity. Christ, representing hierarchy, the second aspect of divinity. And Master R, representing humanity, the third aspect of divinity. And we are told that if this great invocation can be rightly said, the three great planetary centers can be related in a very similar manner, can be brought into a very close relation, so that then the result will be the setting up of such a potent vibration and of such potent note and invocation that the spirit of peace will be invoked and contacted. So we've seen that the great invocation as a cosmic event. Now DK tells us that it's a solar instrument. Let's see, what makes it a solar instrument? Great invocation, DK tells us, is a potent solar instrument designed to bring about changes and needed readjustment on our earth. It's meant to bring the outpouring of love and light from Shambhala onto humanity. It is an appeal to the Christ to reappear. And it is the establishment on earth of the divine plan to be accomplished willingly by humanity itself. And how is the great invocation a solar instrument? Each planetary scheme, as we know, and our Earth amongst the 10 planetary schemes, is a center in the body of our solar logos, being a chakra of our solar logos. And it expresses a particular form of energy or force. Shambhala is also the center where the highest will of the solar logos is imposed upon the will of the planetary logos. The objective of the beings in Shambhala is to understand the solar purpose. And therefore, they are in accordance with the purpose of the solar logos, so that our planetary logos can express it on Earth. Sanat Kumara and our planetary logos is motivated by the supreme purpose, which is part of the vast purpose of the solar logos. And therefore, they, meaning hierarchy, the members of hierarchy, act as a transmitters to humanity and the devas of the will of the planetary logos, and therefore, through him, the solar logos. So therefore, Christ is the transmitter of both our planetary logos and our solar logos. And as Christ faces a great initiation, and my take on it is that it's the ninth initiation, because DK tells us that he's preparing for a great final initiation, and we know that the ninth is the last initiation before moving on to other parts of the solar system. So through the planetary logos, at the final great initiation, DK tells us, flows the power of the solar logos. Hence the Christ preparing for this great final initiation through the enunciation of the great invocation becomes not only an instrument for the implementation of the will of our logos, but consequently an instrument of the solar logos. So the next question that we must ask ourselves is, what is the nature of the will of the logos? It might be said that the purpose of the planetary logos, as it emanates from his high place, under the impact of his will to good, which is the second aspect of his will, is redemptive in nature. As our logos has created our little planet strictly for healing and redemptive purposes, our little planet is unique in its purpose and in its techniques, that on it and within it, a great healing and redemptive experiment is going forward. The will of God has for basic intent the bringing of peace on earth. So we might ask, what is peace? Does that mean that no one makes war? Certainly not. It is way beyond that. It is essentially the establishing of right human relations, of the synthetic rapport between people, the cooperation with the win-win situation between people, understanding, being tolerant to others, the correct interplay between the three planetary centers, Shambhala, hierarchy, and humanity, the three chakras, the head, the heart, and the throat center of our logos. It is also an illumined and loving understanding of God as it affects us, humanity, and works out the divine intent. The great embodiment, the great invocation, therefore, is an embodiment of the will of the Logos. It summarizes the conclusions of the thinking of our planetary Logos, that is, his will and his love to manifest through humanity in his physical body, the Earth. They embody a formula which has been in possession of hierarchy ever since it was founded on Earth. It must therefore become dynamically effective upon the physical plane. So within the stanzas of the Great Invocation, there is a very clear demand for the synthesis of the three aspects of divinity to manifest on earth. Its will, first aspect, expressed in the first stanza, let purpose, in the third stanza rather, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The second aspect, love, may Christ return to earth in the second stanza. And in the first stanza, the third aspect of divinity, intelligence, let light descend on earth. And the fourth stanza, which is the last sentence itself. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth, which is the synthesis. Light, love, power, the three divine aspects to restore the plan on earth. And we notice that the emphasis on the three stances, rather on the four stances, is laid upon the earth. So this concludes our exploration of its origin. And as you can see, it goes way, way beyond our little planet. Next time, in the second part, we will explore its meaning, it being a planetary and a spiritual event, to be used by whom and why, the various levels of interpretation. It is, we are being told, also an individual in alignment. How? So these are the aspects, these are the issues that we will be looking at next time. And in our third part, we will be looking at its potency. We will be exploring sound, the rhythm, and symbol. Is there a symbol behind saying the great invocation? Is there a rhythm that we need to use? And why is the sound, why sounding it very potent? And why should we be sounding it aloud, as DK asks us to do that, to do? Why are all these sound, rhythm, and symbol, why are they so potent? What are their effects on the individual, the group, and on the planet as a whole? And the last thing that we will be exploring is, what are the practical steps? DK gives us very specific instructions on how to say it. So we will be exploring this aspect. So join me now in linking with hierarchy to say the great invocation. So let us, for a very brief moment, linking with one another here, all of us present, facing DK, who is facing three windows, as we are told, the three symbols of the aspects of the soul, will, love, and intelligence. And let us hear Master DK, hierarchy, and with our inner ears, as well as hearing us as a group say together the great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. And let us sound a blue ohm. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. Let us sound a blue ohm. As we sound the ohm, let us visualize that sound having a blue color, the color of love. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. And let us sound another blue ohm. From the center, which we call the race of men, let the plan of light, of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. And let us sound a blue ohm. And now raise your clasped hands above the head and let us say together, and so let it be. And help us do our part. And now bring them down to your forehead and down to the heart and let them rest on your heart. Thank you, everyone. We've still got a bit of time left. And I'm wondering if any of you would like to share a comment or an insight. And raise your hand.
I'll just share with the group, Leah had pointed out earlier in the question box that the full moon in 1945 was actually at the end of May, and she wondered why it's generally called the June festival. And my sense, I believe I'm correct, May was the Gemini, was still in Gemini, and the
yes.
Full moon rotates. It's most often in June. And I think just for the general public and for most people who aren't familiar with astrology, it can be talked about as the June full moon. But in fact, it is the Gemini.
Yes. Correct. Absolutely. So because the rotation of the moon is different from year to year, but from our point of view, from an astrological point of view, and there you quietly pointed out, we see, or actually the sun is actually passing, sort of as if we're seeing it against the background of the Gemini constellation, and from the new moon right up to the end, where it goes then into Cancer, and it's usually around that time, June.
Well,
so the month is not important, yes, the month is not important, but it's usually considered as the June full moon.
Malia offered a comment that she really appreciates the synthesis of the information about the earthly and cosmic significance of the Great Invocation and wants to thank you for this.
Who's this? Who?
Malia.
Ah, thank you. Sorry, I can't see on my screen. I can't see anything. It won't respond. So thank you, Joe, for being the go-between here, because I can't see who's online and who's asking the questions or making a comment.
I see another hand up. Let's see if I can go to the questions panel. For some reason, mine is kind of freezing up too. Oh, here we go. Suzanne says, do you recommend the books of John Burgess on the Great Invocation, The Sacred Vessel of the Mysteries and the Hidden Foundations of the Great Invocation?
Absolutely. It's a brilliant book. I bought it years and years ago, and I didn't understand much, I can tell you. And it took me years to get to a point where that book made a lot of sense to me. And I don't know if Starling Hunter is online tonight.
Yes, he is. But, he made a comment. He says, once organized and it makes a wonderful outline for a book, please do write this all up, is what Starling says.
Starling, can you please say something about your own book? Can Starling talk?
Let's see. Let's unmute him and get his, there he is. I'll see if he can, his mic works. Hi, Starling.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Yes. Well, again, don't want to take too much of the time that people have for questions about what you're doing, because we discussed a little bit by email, and now I see it's very, very well put together. I'm looking forward to the other two, and I think it will make a fine book or manual at some point. Just quickly about the work that I did, which John Burgess wrote the introduction for the first volume, by the way, but it's a 7-volume series called The Compass of Life, and the approach is primarily linguistic for the first 5 volumes, that is, breaking these sentences and phrases down using a variety of linguistic theories and techniques and extracting significance that way. And the last 2 volumes deal a bit more with the material that you discussed here this evening about the triangles that go up from the hierarchy, the Manu, the Christ, and the Mahakohan, all the way up to the prototypical cosmic triangle of the Pleiades, Sirius, and the Great Bear. So, and a 6th volume there deals with some of those as well. But if anyone needs information, I'm pretty easy to find by email. And that 7-volume set is free of charge. It's available for anyone who wants it.
Oh, thank you, Starling. I'm so glad that you you made it tonight. So I'm very, very pleased that that you've been present. You've managed to be present, even though it's quite late.
Yes, and in Germany, it's almost 11 o'clock here in Germany.
So thank you. We really appreciate your presence. Folks, so if you would like to avail yourself of this great opportunity, please contact Starling and deepen your understanding, because it is a very powerful instrument, especially as we are now in the preparation time for the reappearance of the Christ, which we don't know the date, the exact date, but we know that in 2025, Christ will announce in most likely the exact date of his reappearance and how and all the details are going to be communicated to hierarchy. Now, whether DK now will pass that on to us, we don't know. We haven't been privy of this information, but we know that we are the John the Baptist, if you like, the advance army for the Christ. So please avail yourself of this opportunity. Understand this great, powerful prayer, if you like, or invocation, so that we can make the work of the Christ a lot easier, and to we can prepare humanity for Christ energy. So thank you, Starling.
Oh, again. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you much, so much for the effort that you're putting into organizing this. Just can't wait for the other two.
Thank you.
I am sending to the whole group in the chat box the email address if you would like. It's for the Compass of Light. And here is Starling's email address, starling@mit.edu. And I also will post the names of the authors. Suzanne had asked that the names be posted. I'll put those in the chat box. And we'll stay on. We probably will stop the recording soon, but we'll stay on so that any of you who would like to download the handouts of the slides, that's in the handouts box, and we can walk through that. So, Nicole, it doesn't appear we have any more comments.
Okay.
Well,
right. So I would like to remind you then of the next date is the Friday, the 26th of May. And go ahead and download the handout now if you wish, because Brett, who is our technical expert, he's the one who posts everything on the Makara website. He is going to be very busy with the conferences and posting everything on the Makara website. So he will not be doing any posting of this webinar until the end of June. So if you would like to download the handout now and read it at your own pace, at your own leisure, assimilating the information gradually, and we will welcome any comment next time so we could open the next webinar with questions, if you like, or any comments, or you know, anything, any insight that you may have received, you will be most welcome at the next session. So thank you, everyone, for your presence. We really appreciate your presence and your contribution, and have a very good month, and we will see you in May.
Thank you, Nicole.